Hi, I am Nikhil Rawal and you're listening to Working with Gen Z, a show where I have conversations with local and global experts who will help us understand the hope and aspirations of the Gen Z generation. The Gen Z generation is the demographic cohort succeeding the millennials. This show is going to examine all facets of the Gen Z life and the critical factors for winning their hearts and minds. We'll go deep to uncover what motivates them and their mindsets, plus expectations from an employer, brands, their views on money, entrepreneurship value, learning, and much, much more. Welcome to another edition of Working with Gen Z. I'm your host, Nikhil Rawal. Friends, we've spoken in the past episodes that employees are our most valuable assets. Now, today, companies have to work very hard to ensure that employees, if you wish to retain them, they're not looking for other opportunities. There are things that you need to do to keep them engaged so that they feel enthusiastic about the work that they're doing. They're feeling that there's meaning to the work that they're doing and kind of creates a sense of loyalty. There are numerous surveys around the world from Deloitte to Gallup, which says that on a whole, it seems that employees perhaps across the board, across industries, across verticals, across different levels, are generally not very engaged. And there could be a whole host of reasons why that could be. And when you talk about the fact that they're not engaged, it could be because of many things, from a bad boss to not having good opportunities to bad communications and so on. But the end result of that is that you lose your best resources to either competition, or you have them, but you're not achieving innovation, productivity, and so on. So to help us with that, to understand and kind of see that, you know, what are some of the practices that companies are doing, why engagement has become such a big thing, is my guest for today, Luke Getting. Luke, welcome to the show.
I appreciate it, Gil. Excited to chat with you.
Lovely.
Cross this international connection here.
Yes, absolutely. Luke is based all the way in Austin, Texas, and that's the beauty of technology. Power of technology, we're connecting, I don't know, halfway around the world or all the other opposite end of the world. And it's morning for you, it's evening for me, but we're very happy to do this. And as we've done with every episode, friends, I'm going to briefly read out Luke's very illustrious background. So Luke, as I mentioned, is based in Texas, and he's an award-winning communications expert, founder of Covington Presentations. And Luke actually coaches Gen Z employees on how to maximize their effectiveness at work, consults with clients aiming to inspire Gen Z, and enjoys close ties to many of his Gen Z relatives, including his sister, Pup. He champions principles of two-way communications and lead with why. Luke has been featured speaker at presenting in conferences like the PMI, SHRM, ATD, AMA, and a long list. So Luke, once again, pleasure to have you and looking forward to this.
Yeah, let's dive into it.
All right, let's do it, Luke. So let's get straight to it. I'm going to start perhaps at just at a very high level to help our viewers, our listeners, to say that, you know, when we talk about employee engagement, that's a term that, you know, in the learning fraternity, in the HR fraternity, people like us are quite familiar, but just maybe to dispel and simplify it, first help us to understand what is employee engagement in simple terms, and why is it becoming so important?
Yeah, employee engagement, I think you've got two ways of looking at it. One is sort of the metric-based way, which is oftentimes through some sort of input, and employee can check, are you engaged, are you disengaged? I like to describe it, and sometimes pulse surveys look this way, is you have the green smiley face and the red frowny face and the middle yellow kind of just okay.
Yeah,
that's in the simplest way way to think of it, but obviously it manifests at organizations in so many different ways, whether it's people who are just not getting their work done or doing the bare minimum, but also this kind of collaborative nature. I think back even to grade school, where we have group projects and sometimes there's one or two people who are doing the heavy lifting, and there's two, three people who are really checked out. I think that's a good way to think of it fundamentally.
Yeah. No, I like it. They're very simple, as you mentioned. And I like the school analogy where, or perhaps in our MBA classes, right, where if there was a team project, you'd always have one or two who did everything and the other two.
Yeah, yeah.
happy that they were your teammates, right? Because they kind of picked up the load. Now, so that's good. Now, of course, we don't want to get into the stats and the numbers because there is sufficient service out there by, HR agencies and a lot of other companies where they say that on a whole, it seems, employees today are just feeling very disengaged. And since our focus is Gen Z, I'm curious to know, from your experience, you work very closely with that cohort or that population, perhaps. So maybe two questions here. Just what according to you are some of the high level trends which is causing some of the disengagement, and especially with Gen Z, because I remember reading a Gallup poll, which is 2022, saying that close to 54-55% of the Gen Zs feel they're not very happy, they're not very engaged. So maybe some insights from your work.
Yeah, of course. So I think the first thing I'll lead with, in a little bit from your last question, if you want to take the cynical view, I don't want to go fully cynical, but a reason this is coming to the forefront is because companies are hurting. It's something that they're finding they need to pay more attention to. The voluntary turnover rates, it's slowed down a bit this year, but the preceding 2 to 3 years, the kind of great resignation, it was coined. That's the reason companies are really paying attention to this, because people had a lot of employment options, especially Gen Z. The unemployment levels around much of the world, especially here in the US, were very low. And especially for entry-level jobs, they were very much in demand. Mm-hmm. And so naturally, they were exploring their options and seeing what opportunities existed to them. And that meant those voluntary turnover rates were rising. And companies realized, wow, we can't just hire someone, throw them in a cubicle or do remote work and just expect them to be there 1 to 5 years like they maybe did traditionally. In terms of Gen Z specifically,
sure.
I think this is very much a trend that you have this legacy of kind of the way business is done. That is possibly 5, 6, 7 decades, maybe longer. This kind of tradition, everything from the way we run meetings, the way we collaborate, there's still a lot of tradition that existed before connectivity, before we could have these Zoom calls from around the world and be talking to each other within seconds. And so I think you started seeing more of a fracture happening once millennials joined the workforce, but there was still that pressure of, all right, this is the way things are done. Just do your job and don't worry about it. And I think increasingly, as you have a generation that was fully interconnected, fully digital communications from the moment they're born, or at the very minimum when they got their first smartphone, you're just finding a misalignment between these legacy strategies, legacy institutions in the business world, and the way that Gen Z is used to collaborating, communicating, and producing. And so I know we're going very high level, so I'll try to get a little bit specific. So first of all, just the way we communicate. Some of the older generations, phone played a much bigger role, actually jumping out of the phone and calling someone. The boomer generation. Gen X started to really champion email. That was pretty cutting edge at the time. You started to see tools like instant messaging type of tools. And so it's of course an evolution. Gen Z grew up pretty much communicating via all kinds of different messaging services. They're very, very comfortable texting. And even when they do, even when they use the voice akin to a phone call, it might be as a video or a phone message, rather than that real time as someone jumps on the phone. So I think communication methods are evolving. I think another thing that companies are really struggling with is the feedback loop, how quickly that needs to happen. Again, if I think about sort of the legacy of business tradition, oftentimes employees were evaluated annually, like one time a year, a very high stakes meeting, where you go in with your manager, and that might mean you're getting promoted. It might be you're getting a raise. It might mean you're getting fired, being on some performance improvement plan. But like, that's so misaligned with how Gen Z, like many of the devices, the tools, the technology they've been using all their lives, you get instant feedback, right? You put in an answer and it says it's either right or wrong. There's no delay whatsoever. Or you post something and within, if not seconds, within minutes, certainly hours, you're getting all kinds of feedback. People really liked what you posted, or people didn't, or people just ignored it. Like, there's this immediacy that they're used to. And so this idea of I'm only going to be evaluated, and sometimes even progressive companies are doing quarterly reviews, and even that is much too long. And I've actually heard comments, I think this is kind of surprising to me, but it makes sense. I've heard comments from Gen Z employees saying they almost feel like that's kind of manipulative. Like, tell me what I'm doing wrong now so that we can fix it, rather than holding that information in some journal somewhere and sharing it with me in a month or two or 9 months. Like, we could have maybe just addressed that. And so they want those immediate or as soon as possible steps to improve. We coach a lot of our clients on, like, let's connect. Let's set up cadences to meet with people on a weekly basis, if not more regularly. And as I mentioned communications just before this point, being open to communicating on different levels, whether it is kind of a Slack type of message, it doesn't have to always be a sit down formal one-on-one, because some of their issues might be things that they want feedback or mentoring in more of a real-time environment. Obviously, there's boundaries that need to be set there. So yeah, I think those are some of the things that really jump out to me in terms of just why Gen Z is finding this sort of traditional business environment very frustrating to manage based on what they're used to.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I was going to add or maybe even ask the fact that the big debate, the contentious debate about work from home or on site.
Yeah,
agreed.
The main event, I call it.
Yeah. So I think, look, you make good points, but just perhaps to flip and maybe in terms of trying to sort of speak a voice on in defense of the companies, you know, there's also a view that perhaps are the Gen Z generation a little too unreasonable when it comes to maybe things like, their ability to rise in a company. So in other words, I've been in clients where they say, you know, can you tell me exactly in how many years I'm going to become a vice president? And, you know, back in our day, or perhaps from our time, like we may have asked that, but there was no guarantee, right? And so I think things like, you know, I want to know, how quickly will I rise? I want to have a boss, a good boss. And that's pretty legit. But, you know, I mean, if you have a 40-year career or a 45-year career, right, there's a good chance that you may not always get like the best boss or the best mentor or the best coach.
Right.
So from your experience, like, where's the happy medium? In other words, do you sense that in some ways, even companies, I mean, kind of some of the posture or some of the steps that they take, they have to grapple with some of these other realities? Like, I think what you said made sense, but I'm just kind of flipping it from the company's point of view.
Yeah. I think it's a terrific question, a terrific conversation. And what excites me about what I believe about this is that it is solvable. It is something that companies can do. It requires some creativity and changing of things, but I think it is a solvable issue. So the reality, the way I see it, is, again, a lot of companies, there's not a ton of creativity in terms of progress. You basically get hired, and then your next step is to get promoted. And there could be a 2 to 3 to 5 year gap. And yeah, you do those annual reviews that I mentioned and say, yeah, you're doing pretty good at this, and you're doing okay at this, and you're doing poorly, you need to improve on this. And that's kind of all you get. Those are the only milestones in that, or really there aren't milestones, I guess is what I'm saying. Again, related to what I previously mentioned, Gen Z is very used to levels and progress and points and gamification elements. And so it's not that. And yes, your stat is very right. I think it's like 40% of Gen Z expects to get a promotion within the first year of working there. And people, it's kind of an alarming stat. Like, I get it. I get why people have an intense reaction to it.
Yeah.
But I think, again, it's getting a little distracted by this idea of promotion. What I believe that stat is really saying is they want to see that they're making progress, that they're growing, that they aren't at the same place year one as they are at year two, et cetera. So the big thing I encourage companies to look at is, how can we essentially gamify this process, to use kind of a fun term, and to make it seem more exciting to everyone. The reality is, employees are making progress all the time on different skills, on different projects. It just takes a matter of their manager or their company creating systems to recognize that. So it can be, there's some really neat, you can get into some HR tools that have some of this built in, or gamification tools. But I like to stress, this can be very simple. It can be as simple as a Word doc or a PowerPoint slide that says, here are the 4 or 5 skills that are really critical to your job, and here's where I would rate you, where you're currently at. You're at a 80% on this. You're at a 70% on this. You're at a 90%. Here are the 3 or 4 steps you can take in the next quarter to get to 100% on this skill. All of a sudden now they have so much more information. They have a better sense of where they're coming from and how they're being perceived professionally. And then recognizing that the return, again, companies, the traditional way of doing business is very, the legacy way, if you will, it's slow. Like, you might have a once a year gala, right? And you rent a ballroom, and some of the top employees get it recognized, a lot of don't. And that's kind of it. And studies have shown, and you may have the exact stats, but that wears off very quickly, oftentimes within weeks. Whereas people who are being recognized on a regular weekly basis, hey, you did a nice job on that report. That actually has more staying power longer term. And so, again, not just fixating on the hey, you're getting hired, hey, here's your 5-year promotion opportunity, but showing that progress throughout is, I believe, the way to really help them understand how they're being perceived, and to gamify in a way that improves communication both ways.
Yeah, no, excellent. I really like what you said. I mean, in fact, I was just thinking of a story, Luke, where I'd met this senior partner of one of the large consulting companies, and obviously he was referring this in the context of Asia. He says that, in Asia, people don't grow by skills, they grow by titles. And I was wondering, what's he trying to say? And then he says that, for the younger employees, what matters is their perception that they're actually growing, even if we just, make him from, let's say, an assistant manager to a manager to a senior manager over the 3 years. Essentially, the job isn't very, very different. I mean, it's almost perhaps 90% same, maybe with the tweaks.
Or just overseeing people that did the exact same job you just did.
Yeah. And then, but psychologically or mentally, they feel that, hey, you know what? I've risen 2 levels in the next 2 years or the last 2 years, right? So I think that's a good point. You mentioned, so look, just curious, I mean, from your experience just working with Gen Z directly or even clients, like what are some practices, like you mentioned gamify, and I really like if we had to break some of these HR metrics in numbers, and just so that, it almost seems to them that, hey, listen, this can be achievable. But any practices that come to mind, or anything that you sense that, hey, these are 1 or 2 companies, or these are 2 or 3 trends that I've seen, which are like cutting edge and kind of different, and Gen Zs are like really looking for that, or they're really happy about it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I'll actually start with gamification, because I have a really fun example, and then we can kind of zoom out more on the organizational level. But I just have to give a shout out to someone I met a month or two ago. He was a manager at one of the large tech companies, and same issue they were dealing with. People were disengaged. They weren't seeing progress in their careers. And then again, this is why I like to say creative. It's that he didn't spend a whole lot of money on this. He spent some time and energy. So what he did, and I love that this is an international podcast. I think Mario is pretty international. Right? Everyone knows Mario and Mario Kart, right?
Yeah.
So he essentially created a printout at their office. And also you could view it online, where people had a Mario Kart-esque track. And so for those of you who played Mario Kart, there's like boxes along the way where you get power-ups.
Yeah.
And you can run into obstacles too. And so he kind of created this whole almost Monopoly version of Mario Kart. And so people could actually see their progress there on the track. You would update it and they would have various power-ups along the way and they get rewards, whether it's digital rewards or parking spots, gift cards, etc. And people really got excited about it. And it really created this fun atmosphere to something that was otherwise, what's more like either boring or scary, an annual review.
Right.
He turned this progress into something very tangible and fun. And so I thought that example was so cool because, again, that didn't mean that he invented some dashboard that took 3 years to develop and implement. They just created it out of cardboard paper printouts.
So they have to kind of work. I mean, like every milestone, like either if they've done something, it can be like, it'd be like, power up moment. And
exactly.
On a project, they're going down the dungeon or something. I played Mario many years back.
Yeah. It's like little rewards, but people still appreciate that. It's not only the reward, it's the recognition that they did achieve something. And so often people just go unthanked for putting in those hard hours. And naturally, people think twice about doing that the next time if no one even seems to care. I liked that example. Zooming out a little bit to your greater point about just how can companies engage at a organizational level. I think this is so important. This is where leadership plays such a big role. I find that a lot of times at organizations, the leaders, you have these sort of, and this is sort of the time of the year as we get this ready for 2024, you have these really high stakes, all hands kind of meetings, right? A lot of times those will happen at the beginning of the year. Yeah. And that tends to be where mission and goals, that tends to be where that's most discussed. January, February, here's our grand mission for 2024. However, at a lot of companies, that kind of messaging where it's very values-based, it's very mission-centric, that tends to fall off after those big meetings. Right? Then it just comes down, you get into your day-to-day tasks, and you kind of lose that forest for the trees analogy, if you will. And so Gen Z as a generation statistically, and you mentioned some of the amazing reports that exist out there that are comprehensive, 20,000, 40,000 respondents, pretty incredible research that some of these companies like Gallup have done. It shows that Gen Z resonates the most with values of any generation. They're the most motivated by their values manifesting in their organizations and in their professional capacity. And so the challenge to managers, to leaders out there is let's make sure, yes, of course, for these big all hands meetings, we are leading with values. We are getting everyone excited about what we're trying to achieve. But let's really make sure that doesn't just disappear February through December. Let's make sure that on our day, and this is where top down is so important, right? Now that we're talking about middle managers, now we're talking about even lower level managers. How do we make sure we're infusing our values into everyday projects that we're doing and making sure that each employee, famous example is, forgive me, I'm not going to get all the attribution right, but the story generally goes this. You got kind of three brick makers, mm-hmm. and they're laying bricks, and one of them, they ask, hey, what are you doing? And the one guy says, hey, I'm like building this little line here. And then they kind of ask the next person, he's stacking bricks. What are you doing? Well, I'm building this room. And then you ask the third person, they're like, I'm building a church. Mm-hmm. And so they're seeing this kind of grand vision, even though they're one contributor of hundreds of different laborers who are helping put these bricks together. But they see that big picture. They see that grand vision of how, even on the individual level, laying brick by brick, they understand what they're trying to achieve. That is it's difficult to maintain that over the course of the year. But again, Gen Z, that's going to especially lead to higher engagement. If they don't feel that, you're going to get to that situation where they're just looking at, okay, this is just a paycheck type of job. And if I'm not growing, and if I can get a better paycheck elsewhere, what rationale would I have to stay?
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And in fact, you mentioned, look, about, the vision and I recall a conversation with another guest where they were saying that there's a European insurance company and they were revamping their mission and vision and mission. And then what they saw from kind of the demographics of the company or the talent bench is that, a large part of maybe perhaps the boomers or Xers are going to be out in the next few years. And so they actually got more or a larger percentage of the Gen Z or the millennial and the Gen Z population to be involved in the exercise, which traditionally
like that.
Traditionally would have been just the senior leadership trying to frame the next purpose or the next vision and mission statement, but that senior leadership may only have a limited kind of time in that company. And so I thought it was very interesting. And the other example of that, perhaps just for you to know, is that you must have heard of SAP, SAP, ERP company. And I recall reading what they do is that they actually have created these short TikTok videos, and the senior leadership, some 40 of their senior leaders have actually created these TikTok videos in which they convey their values and mission vision. And so their assumption is that, here is a cohort who doesn't have a lot of attention span. And so it may be futile for them to go and read an annual report or even on the website. So maybe the TikTok is their medium. And furthermore, so let's say I'm going to work for SAP, but I'm going to be based in Austin. Then I need to, they've gone a step further where they've created videos where they have SAP offices to say that this is where you can go in Austin to, eat on weekends. So these are where the libraries are, and this is where the sporting events are. So I think it's more in a kind of a strategy to bring them in. But I thought it was kind of unique. And
I am a big fan. It's a tremendous example, and the underlying principle we're describing is trying to meet employees where they are, right? And that's exactly right. The idea of traditionally you give a one-way keynote in that all hands meeting I described, and then a lot of top level executive comms, they come through a newsletter, right? Some sort of email, and it's boring to anyone, but especially a generation that's used to consuming short form video content largely. And so I really appreciate that example of trying to create comms, because you would think as a leader, your goal would not just be to have some nice document that you think looks nice. The goal should be that people look at it and read it or view it and engage with it. And so that comes down to trying to find out, as you indicated, the majority of the core workforce, not looking at the C-suite, is probably comprised of millennials, increasingly Gen Z, some Gen X.
Yeah.
And so how do they want to consume things? And Slack is an amazing... Not just Slack, but all these messaging tools. There's so many abilities to share more of that type of content. And I would encourage also, and you mentioned it, inviting that two-way feedback, right? One of the things that immediately jumped out when you told that story, one of my very first jobs, I was in outside sales. I was traveling 3 out of 4 weeks of every month. I was meeting with our clients on a daily basis, getting really important feedback. And I was really excited because we were getting our team together from around the country. We were all gathering at one place at the start of the year, the same kind of event I've been describing. And I was like, this is going to be so cool. We're all going to share ideas. We're going to collaborate. We're going to come up with this shared vision for the next year. And when I got there, we went to dinner.
Dying to hear this.
We went to dinner. Everything was starting out good. And then the following morning, we show up. And the executive team has already prepared everything. They just talk at us for 8-9 hours that day. There was no really input requested at all of us. And it was also the vision itself wasn't aligned with what a lot of us had been experiencing meeting with our clients. And so that is really an important moment, because the thing I stress is that there was no just continuing as is for me. It was either this meeting was going to go really well and I was going to get re-energized by it, or it went poorly and I was going to get really demotivated from it and realize that this company doesn't really want my input. They've got their own vision and I'm just there to to put in the reps, if you will, of it was motivating. And had I had more, had they shown that effort to allow us to have that input, I think it could have been a really enriching experience.
Okay. No, absolutely. I think the whole term called learned helplessness, like in a way you want to share, you want to kind of be part of that team, and your vision of that team is like, you know, hey, we're going to solve this together. But perhaps even unintended, you know, I think that, and sales, you can learn so much from sales, because I've spent many years in my career in sales too. But if that environment isn't there, you could feel very isolated and very demotivated, because then there's also the pressure of performance for you, for us, for the
right. Sales. And that's exactly right. Like I was not only being asked to follow his vision I didn't really believe in, but also that's how I make my living. if you're not bought in, and sales is an intense example of that, because people tend to make a lot of their salary off of commission.
Yeah.
But I think it illustrates the point really well that if we're not bought in, and so creating two-way pathways for feedback from the whole organization, I think is so valuable.
So, look, in your experience, if we had to I'm asking something hard, where maybe, like, let's say if we had to say that, okay, these are the top two things that maybe what you find companies are doing really well, and you're working towards increased engagement, and on the flip side, maybe top two things that they're not doing well. I mean, like, you could just take the 2 years, they're the opposite of that, but just in your experience, like, you mentioned gamification, you mentioned communication, all these things are great points, but just, are there one or two things which you feel that are like, if these two are taken care of, these two or three, right? For most of us, for a lot of us, it could be perhaps pay. I mean, like if I think back, like, you know, pay was a big motivator, and I am assuming it's still there for the Gen Z. But I think post COVID, it seems like pay does matter. But I think if there is high pay and maybe not as much, as you say, autonomy or growth and so on, I think that can wear off. And in perhaps in some generations, we were able to swallow it to say, hey, you know what, I'm going to just suck it in and just, you know, kind of ride this out for a little bit more or whatever. I think about this generation may not be true. So I was curious to know, if we can think of if there's a way for you to say that, okay, talk to here.
I'm going to pounce on your pay prompt quickly, and then I'll zoom out to that second point. So I find this conversation, and honestly, we could probably spend an hour talking. To me, it's such a fascinating conversation. Pay and transparency about compensation, like Gen Z is very open, very transparent, and they share amongst each other. We're not just talking like their colleagues at the company. We're talking just as a whole generation on social media, sharing their insights from all the way from interviewing and recruiting to how they're working today and what they're being compensated as. So there is a narrative that Gen Z are entitled, they just want to be paid huge amounts of money without putting in the work. I find, so, and then they're also, and you may have mentioned this before in previous conversations, like they're actually statistically the generation that's motivated by money the least. So like, how do you reconcile those two ideas? It's very confusing. And so what I've started to gravitate toward as I really work through this with people is I think pay in many terms is a substitute for respect. And Gen Z is also shown to be heavily inclined to be looking for respect and to be valued by their employers. And so it's because I had a construction engineering firm that I was working with. And one of the managers said, many of my employees keep coming to me for pay raises. And like, I'm frustrated by having to do this over and over. Nah. And I get that. I appreciate that. But I asked, like, so once if you gave them a pay raise, and in some cases they did, like, what happened? Was the engagement level just like skyrocketing after that? Mm-hmm. And generally, no. It was generally like a week or two high, if you will. Then it kind of just fell. And so I thought that was really informative, because it was really, I think the way that her employees were perceiving it is that's sort of a check the box thing. Like, I want to be shown that you respect me at the level that I know my industry peers are getting compensated. But that's not going to ultimately change my engagement levels that much. It's just to make sure that at the that's almost a bare minimum. But how do we go beyond that? So I think respect and feeling valued and statistically proves out to be actually much more of a motivator. So my answer to your question about just overall what are the best companies doing in terms of engagement, I'm going to try to answer it at the executive level and then and more on a day-to-day managerial level. So, and both of these we've touched on before, which lead with why is the top thing I would talk about from the executive, from the C-suite. It's not enough to just have your vision. This is what we're trying to do. We're trying to improve our numbers by 30%. Like, why are we trying to do that? Gen Z, more than any other generation, wants to know that background, wants to know that context for why something is trying to be achieved. And again, we talked about earlier this sort of legacy mentality. Older generations, much more when they entered the workforce, they were just told, this is what you need to do. This is why you have to do it. Like, but not the background. It was more just a demand that you do this. And so Gen Z's just, that's not how they're wired. They want to know the why. And they're pretty much, again, they're being very digital native. They're used to, anytime they have a question, they look it up. Yeah. They're going to try to find that answer. And the thing I stress to companies is it's not enough to just give some sort of kind of generic, we talk about like corporate speak, right? You see these press releases all the time or CEOs who give sort of answers that are not answers. Gen Z is very sensitive to that. They're very much looking for authenticity. Yeah. And so there are a lot of pitfalls. Like, it's not enough to just say, oh, this is generally why we're like, you need to be specific or that can even backfire and create mistrust. So leading with why, the last point, just like emphasize that to executives is that if you leave that gap, that vacuum of information, Gen Z will fill it. They will search out answers. I spend some time, obviously, at Gen Z internet threads, internet forums, different tags around that. And I'm like, if executives could see what the speculation is as to why companies are doing these things because they didn't tell them directly, I think this would be a big motivator to get out in front of the communications. Because again, the conversations that are taking place, whether leaders choose to be a part of them or not, is kind of left up to how they choose to engage. I'll pause there, and then I'm happy to jump on that a second point as well. But any
no, I question? Think yeah, no, I think you make. I really like, Luke, how you mentioned. The whole aspect of pay and the way you framed it with respect. And I particularly like your comment about the fact that, you know, even when you give someone a high pay, it isn't like, you know, now that you're going to see this guy or this person like be dramatically different over the next 1 year.
Exactly.
It'll be like you exactly said, probably for a month or even less, right? Or a month. And then, you know, maybe he's back, disgruntled or back, back in the zone, where he was. So it's kind of a temporary blip. So I really like how you said that. And now also the fact that the why makes sense, because here's a generation which perhaps does so much of the homework, in comparison to the other generations. They go to Glassdoor and they go to Pishmore and all these sites where they can check out.
Yep.
Stuff. So transparency does match it. So, no, I think that's great. Let's flip it over. Anything that you would say maybe on this side that, okay, just avoid these two things.
Yeah. And this is still, leadership still plays a big role in creating this culture. But the most important, if listeners get nothing else from this, the idea of learning and growth opportunities is so critical to retaining Gen Z and the quote unquote emerging workforce employees.
Yeah.
So you mentioned it earlier, Nikhil, like they're not coming into roles with this mentality that this is where I'm going to be for the next two decades, three decades.
Yeah.
I'm starting here.
And especially now, because with AI, there's even more fear put into this whole thing. Like, yes. Oh, you know what? We would have trained them, but now even those jobs are going to be done by a machine, right? So, like, don't expect to be promoted because someone else is doing that for you. Now we got to figure out, or you better upskill yourself.
And there's maybe three factors I'll quickly just to tell people get into the headspace of where Gen Z is coming from. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, they grew up, like the oldest Gen Zers who are now in the workforce, they grew up during the Great Recession, right? Their parents, their siblings, their family friends were getting laid off at that time and were really struggling. And that oftentimes that job that they had been at for 10, 20, 30 years, right? So they saw the impacts of that and how just putting all your quote unquote eggs in one basket, like how that can actually lead to just one day waking up and not having that safety anymore. So yeah, the Great Recession, the pandemic, and then just this idea of having that virtual communications, being able to share and create that community around that, again, is very different from how other generations were able to share that. So those are big factors in how they perceived the workforce and where they're coming from.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Do you know of, I mean, again, this could be a hard, but on a whole, like, are there companies that do you sense, Luke, that, like, I don't know, I mean, you can pick, I don't want to say top two, but maybe just some company names which everybody feels like, you know what, that's the dream company, or to go there. Generally, you think of some tech companies or maybe some startup companies, but as you say, like, sometimes in a large organization, my experience has been then like you could see a big brand from the outside, but the moment you entered in, you're just a small dog in a corner somewhere and like just doing your stuff. Like nobody knows how it adds to the big picture, right? So I don't know. I'm curious to know, like, are you seeing that like they're perhaps preferring to maybe an organization which is maybe a smaller mid-sized company, but really brings in a good culture? Or are they just like, there's always that dream list, like, that, you know, all of us
go
out of college?
it's a great question. And I firmly agree with you where it's difficult to just come out with someone because so much of this happens on a department level, right? Yeah. Or like even a specific management, one manager is leading it to you, like, so a lot of times I try to focus on the key principles because it is so difficult to know if that's actually happening organization wide or are these just, and as you know too, a lot of this is press releases who like this is purely a marketing recruiting strategy. So are you seeing the full picture? Yes or no, but a few companies to me that excite me for two reasons. One, they are doing some really interesting, innovative things, but two, they're actually kind of espousing and in the space of employee engagement and person engagement as well. So the first one is called Slido. Have you used it? Like it's an audience.
Yeah, Slido.com. Is that the company, right? Where you
what's that?
Yeah, sure. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were recently acquired by Cisco in the last year or two. Uh-huh. The content that they put out, so a big shout out to their blog and their marketing pieces. So they're an audience participation tool, and so right away they espouse these values of two-way, of participation, of really powerful metrics around how did this meeting go, how did this presentation go. People can ask questions, you can upvote when people ask questions. So this platform and the surrounding strategy around it, really, really cool. I'm such a huge fan. So I actually use Slido.
They actually, sorry to interrupt, but
yeah.
Do they use that? I mean, this is a silly question, but do they use it at the most micro level, like in each meeting?
Yes.
Or that's, oh, really? Okay. So
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Like if we're done with one meeting, they would quickly get a quick survey of how that went. But
what's exactly.
The critique of that? I mean,
front end, they have unlimited ideas for, like, especially if you've got remote teams, they have unlimited ideas for like icebreakers and fun activities you can do. One example is like everyone can share a picture that they took like from the last month, like, well, one cool image. I thought that was a really cool icebreaker idea. Or sometimes they do a show and tell, like if you are a remote worker, what's something like you want to grab some stuffed animal maybe you had your whole life, like really fun ideas. So check out their blog. They've got incredible content and ideas to really drive connections. And again, these are just simple things. Maybe it's 5 minutes at the start of a meeting. It helps people get appreciation for the person, not just the function that someone's trying to achieve. But I also, and you just mentioned it, like I would really, really stress the importance of those metrics around meetings. So I use Slido for, I give talks on Gen Z, how managers and leaders can better engage with Gen Z in the workforce. That's how we connected, of course.
Yeah.
And I use Slido throughout. So people are actually using polls. I have my presentation set up so they can drive the answers to the polls drives what content I share with them. Like it's that audience driven.
Yeah.
But the important thing is at the end of the meeting, I will actually put up a poll and say, okay, what do you think of this presentation? Like, what was your rating for? How much value did it bring to your career? And how engaged did you feel throughout? And did you have any other questions or comments? It's really easy. They do it on their phone. It's 5 stars. They can click up to 5 or 2, 3, whatever they decide. And so literally by the time, assuming I drove to this meeting, by the time I walk out of that place and get to my car, I can look up on my phone, on my admin view, and see what my talk scored. And so I'm proud to say I've actually scored on average about a 4.7 out of 5. But that has come through refining. I started off a little lower in the lower 4s, and I tweaked my content, I tweaked my strategy, I tweaked the way I ran those meetings, and I could see that maybe went up 0.2%. Like I could see a tangible tactical difference in the scores I was receiving. And again, so many times, especially leaders, I feel like I'm doing this now, just kind of talking.
Go ahead, please. Yeah,
so many times leaders they get this meeting together of 5, 6, 7 employees, their direct reports, and they talk 75% of the meeting. People may weigh in a little bit, and then they're like, oh, that was a good meeting because they talked the whole time. They like hearing themselves talk. They have no idea. They have no metrics to actually back that up. And so, I'm a huge fan of Slido for the content they create, the strat, because it's not enough. Last point I'll make here is just like, it's not enough to just have a tool, right? We've all seen these kind of cutesy tools. A lot of event apps have all kinds of neat things, but a lot of times no one uses them. Or if they use them, they use them in a really gimmicky way. Like, hey, where's everyone from? Cool. There's like a word cloud coming up on screen. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but then that they shut that down and they just give a one-way talk for the next 58 minutes. Like that didn't really change the dynamic.
Yeah.
So it really is not just about the tools. It's about the strategy behind them.
No, I really like, I'm going to check out that blog. And in fact, you mentioned, I forget the name of the company, but somebody mentioned to me recently that, for example, one of the things that one of the companies is doing, especially as you will appreciate in the business of learning, sometimes no matter what you do, perhaps if it's a busy part of the year or whatever for an employee, getting people to come into the classroom is difficult. So this company's kind of devised an app, and what happens is that a lot of times when you have this pull mechanism, like I have to keep saying, hey, look, come to the class. I would say that, look, you know what? Every time you attend the training, you accrue these learning dollars. And so they just,
gamification.
Yeah. So there's gamification. So they just earn, they accrue these learning dollars. And at the end of the day, like, let's say, you earn $500, like you could just actually redeem it for a price or you get the $500 and so you can do whatever you want to do. So it becomes a good kind of a way to incentivize for them to come.
Exactly. Yeah, I love that example. And to even go a little further, just if you can get an idea of like, try to get to know those people a little. Again, this is more for a manager with direct reports, like, because not everyone wants to have a gift card to the mall or whatever it is. Like, not everyone cares about certain things. So if you can, within a realm of reasonability, if you know each employee on a level where you can help tailor the prizes, $20 to something that they really care about is totally different from $20 to let's say they don't drink coffee and you give them a Starbucks gift card. Well, yeah, they're not going to care about that. But if it's something they do care about, then they'll feel more appreciated. So yeah, those kinds of examples are so critical.
And you mentioned that it was very funny, Luke, you mentioned that just not too long back, I was in a training for a client and was delivering the training. And in fact, the client in this case was perhaps a Gen Z person. And you know how traditionally, like when you're done with the training, they'll give you that feedback form, the traditional, like, the physical form. And nowadays everything is all so I like you were saying what you did, which of course I would say that brave for you to kind of suggest that, but she actually put out the form right in front of the class and like she was asking me real like, okay, what did you find about this session? What gives you real time feedback?
Yeah.
You know, so there's so much transparency. Like, they don't have to worry about saying, and it could be a good and bad thing for someone like us, like to say that, okay, wow, you know, I'm going to now really see, like, okay, was this a good show or did this bomb? But,
It reminds me, like, from a managerial perspective, that's being authentic, right? That's being vulnerable.
Yeah.
That's showing it's not this, like, highly curated environment where negative reviews get shuffled away or deleted.
Yeah.
There is an element of, even though, yeah, you might have some meetings that aren't that great, but at least you're learning from them. Yeah. And at least your employees feel heard by listening to that. And yeah, I capture that feedback during the meeting. It's not even like they're filling it out in the last 5 minutes. It is that real time, and that's the way, again, Gen Z is used to using digital devices for feedback. The idea of filling out a paper card,
correct.
It's just not gonna. So, on that note of feedback, and I know we're running going through, but on that note of feedback, it's really important for leadership to share what they're doing with that feedback.
Yeah,
because a lot of times, and that's where that real time, your example is perfect, because a lot of times people fill out, I'm thinking you're probably very familiar to get like those long corporate surveys, 30 minutes of my time, and I'm filling out all these paragraphs. Yep. And then I'm like, all of a sudden I'm thinking, like, one day, I just 6 months later, I'm like, whatever happened to that? Like, why? And then the next year when you get one, you're probably not going to put much effort into it, right? You're doing like, check. Okay. Because you don't know that anyone even looked at that. And so
you never hear back. So where that went.
You never hear back. Yeah. It's like you send out this love letter to your company and they don't even open it. And so, and maybe you did as leadership, but it's really critical to share the why, like, hey, we actually saw this and here are kind of the things that we found from it. And then I mentioned earlier, lead with why. You don't have to implement everything, but it's really important to share why or why not. Because again, that's that full transparency to make people feel heard and help them get in a better understanding for your decisions.
Yeah. So look, I know this has been such a fabulous conversation. I know we could go on. I'm going to ask the one final question just as a way to close out our conversation. Just as a way for all our listeners, and I think across the board, perhaps why this Gen Z, maybe just a simple one or two do's and don'ts from the company's perspective, like what they should keep in mind. And I think we should flip it to say that even from the Gen Z's perspective, right? Let's not put it all on the company side. What can they do, as a prospective employee or as a role model employee, perhaps if they can become one, right? Two ways where you can think of simple one or two tips that the companies keep one, two in mind, and same thing for on the Gen Z side.
Yeah, it's a terrific question, a great way to end. My headline here is kind of empathy among generations. Like, try to appreciate that different doesn't mean bad.
Yeah.
Like, this is, and that they're, and that's, again, I feel like, again, why is important, because that can help both sides get a better understanding of what that other side, what that other generation, other work members of the workforce are trying to achieve. So I'll speak first to the company side. What's a good way to start thinking about Gen Z? Well, there is so much to like about Gen Z. They're very DIY. They're very used to just doing things, looking things up on their own and taking action. They're highly entrepreneurial. We're seeing the highest rates of entrepreneurship of any generation. They have these side hustles many times where they're learning and developing a lot of skills that they're actually bringing into the workforce. They're extremely, we've talked about values. They really do care about the values. It's not just lip service. And they're very well rounded. Like, they think about work-life balance. And a lot of companies are like, oh, they're lazy. They're not working hard. They're thinking about burnout too, because what good is it for someone to have someone who just works so hard that all of a sudden a month later they're just kind of worthless because they're so burnt out, and that's a good way for people to fatigue and to want to leave a job too. So they're trying to measure and balance that. It's the thing I tell companies, like,
yeah,
guess what, like it or not, Gen Z is the future of the workforce.
Sure. Yes. So, no, absolutely.
It makes sense now to start talking, communicating, empathizing with them, try to get an understanding of how can our workforce evolve to better serve these future generations of workers and leaders. That's my main, hopefully optimistic perspective.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And again, anything from the Gen Z side, I mean, should they all kind of just, you know, maybe be a bit humble. I mean, I'm just, again, like you said, I think there's so much upside and there's so much positives that we should all kind of extract or see as we try and get them, because I think they will be the one core who will be there the longest among all the generations now, right, for the next 30 years or 40 years or even more. But from their perspective, just any quick tip, I mean, be a little flexible, or I don't know, what would you say?
So I have definitely some ideas for the Gen Z. So the first thing I like to stress to them is, let's say you are running into some roadblocks, you're a little bit frustrated with your job. It is a very important skill for your whole career, whatever you're doing, to be able to drive change, to be able to influence other people and to make things happen. And so what I say is, if you're thinking about leaving, you've got one foot out the door, that's a perfect opportunity to give that skill a shot. Try to develop some things. So try to, because you can always leave. If they say no, you can always leave anyway. You're planning on doing it. Yeah. But before you leave, or maybe it's successful that you're able to actually drive some change and make your job, there's probably a reason you took that job. There's something you liked about the company or the people or the mission. And so if maybe you're able to drive that change, maybe it makes it a better job for you and want to stay there longer. So if you're able to kind of collect your thoughts, if you're able to pitch, maybe it's oftentimes to your manager, right? You're talking like, hey, these are the things I'm frustrated with. But the most important thing on that level is to make sure that you're trying to frame your concerns in the list, like relatively aligned with the priorities of your manager and relatively aligned with the mission of the company. When it's just kind of like me, this is what I think, this is what I want, that's going to be less, people are going to be less receptive to that than, hey, I think if we created this kind of two-way communication system, I think it could help the company achieve its mission better. I think it could help you be a more successful manager. Well, that I'm going to listen to a little bit more. So that's the first thing I emphasize, just in terms of being able to try to create that change. And the other thing is just, again, try to, if you can seek out mentors, if you can seek out people who will tell you the background, the context for that why that Gen Z really craves, that's going to be really valuable in helping you. Again, it doesn't mean you have to stay somewhere certain, but you're going to be growing and you're going to be learning by getting other people to share with you. And if you can come from that place of respect and empathy that, hey, it doesn't mean that it's right or that it's right for your generation, like the perfect fit, the way things have been done, doesn't mean like it perfectly works with your generation, but it's worth trying to get a sense of why it happened. Chances are there was a reason that it was set up to be this way. Yeah. So just if you can get that understanding, then again, you're more informed and you're better prepared to either make tweaks or perhaps there's things that you didn't consider that you now know about and then can inform your strategies for the future. Yeah. So a big reason I got into talking and getting consulting on this topic is just trying to let's work on this together, right? This should be a teamwork thing. Like, we're all one company, we're all one organization, and just saying, oh, that generation's lazy, that generation's old and terrible, and like, it's, that's not productive. And let's work together, and we can learn so much from each other. And different doesn't have to mean bad. Different can mean good and exciting, and we can all kind of evolve.
No, absolutely. What a fabulous advice, Luke. I really, really liked it. I think that's an excellent way to, I mean, kind of sum up and balance out the entire conversation we've had, right? So it's a two-way street, like you have been emphasizing, right? I think the company can do enough, but certainly, and I really like your message about the Gen Z, and I think it applies to all of us, right? I think even for some of us who worked, right? Sometimes it's easy for us to walk out or say, you know, I've seen enough, or I've done that, and I've done this. But I think there's our chance to make the change and influence. So I think that's really good advice. And what a fabulous conversation. I know the hour has flown by.
Yeah, it really has. Appreciate the question. It was great.
I really enjoyed it. Luke, thank you once again. And I think I'm quite excited. I think there are ways for us to collaborate as well, I'm sure. And if your travels ever bring you to Asia or India, please do let me know. I look forward. I have family there. So once again, thank you very, very much. Take care. And
thank you. Yeah. Have a great evening. Get some sleep now. Don't stay up too late.
Thanks. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Working with Gen Z. I hope you learned and gained new insights as I did on understanding the Gen Z population a little bit better. If you've enjoyed this conversation, please share this with someone who you think would benefit from the ideas and the insights shared on this episode. Please note, we also have a video version of this episode on the YouTube channel called Working with Gen Z. You can find that version on that YouTube channel. Secondly, I would really appreciate if you could leave a review of this episode on Apple Podcasts so it will help us to reach out to new listeners for the show. Make sure you subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other platform you're listening to your podcast on. I would really appreciate if you could leave me a review and tell us what did you like. Tell us what we can improve to help you understand this very important generation. Finally, as always, you can learn the many basics of the Gen Z generation through the book Target Gen Z, your guide to understanding the Gen Z mindset on brands, work-life learning, and more. This book is available both on the Kindle and the paperback formats on Amazon. Till such time, I look forward to seeing you in the very next episode. See you soon.